Hello and welcome to CDP B353, Automated Workload Provisioning with the Azure Pack and Windows PowerShell. My name is Charles Joy. I am joined by Michael Green, Tiander Turpin, and Jeff Goldner. I got his name almost right, but I didn't. I screwed up your name. So we're here to talk to you about, well, you've heard of CPS. Who's here heard of CPS now? You weren't in the keynote? Our job was to deploy workloads on CPS, but because we're using Windows Azure Pack and we're using VM roles and we're using DSC and we're using SMA, it doesn't matter where you deploy it, but we're using it. These workloads, the first party workloads for Microsoft, Exchange and SharePoint, Active Directory, SQL, we're using CPS as the test bed to make sure they're validated on CPS. But you can take exactly what we've done here and do it on your own. In fact, we've published how to do this and some older artifacts that will refresh in the future. So I'm going to walk through some slides here. And I think actually I hand it over to Jeff for the intro and expectations, the first couple slides, where he, for those of you who did not know what CPS is, he will give you a rundown.
In case you haven't heard it enough already this week, I want to give you a real quick refresher. As you know, that is CPS. Hopefully you've all got to the show floor and seen a real live CPS rack running, one rack, first rack. We didn't have room for four racks, and we couldn't afford the freight. Anyway, it's components that are off the shelf today, Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, and the Windows Azure Pack. There is nothing special about these particular components. Yes, we fixed a bunch of bugs. You get those bug fixes anyway. You don't need to buy CPS for that. But now that you can, I don't know why you wouldn't. Well, maybe money. But so we decided we were going to put all this stuff together like most of you have been trying to do for years and see how hard it was and see what kind of pain it caused. And so that next time, there's less pain for all of us. The CPS rack itself is a product that you can buy from Microsoft and Dell. It's a complete package solution. Just add water and you're good to go. There's very little left to do when it reaches your data center floor. You have to change passwords, and you have to load certificates, and do some validation, and you're pretty much good to go. We do all the integration in the factory. The Dell team builds the hardware. We add the software on top. We have some special automation that we built just for adding the software on top. And it wouldn't be any good if you couldn't run any workloads on it. So my job in the CPS team is to make sure that you can actually deploy this for yourselves or your customers, running not just the most common Microsoft workloads, but pretty much any other workload that follows this pattern. And the CAT team has been very generous with their time in developing artifacts through SMA and DSC to let you offer self-service to your customers. And it's simple enough, even I can do it. And we'll show you some of how simple it is to run it, if not how to build it. So all Dell hardware. Next. And you know, that's a pretty common view of the stack. We built everything on Windows components. There is no hardware RAID storage, for example. Most of the software, most of the networking stack is software-defined networking. So we have software-defined storage, software-defined networking, and software-defined compute. There's a fairly large-scale cluster in there. There are a couple other clusters, one for management, one for the edge network, and the storage cluster as well. And within the management cluster, we even have a SQL Server cluster. In total, there are approximately 30 virtual machines already pre-installed to run the management stack right out of the box. So we have highly redundant everything. Most everything is N plus two redundancy. You can survive two component failures. Networking is N plus one. We have tested a full stamp to support 8,000 VMs. Now, what I tell people is these VMs aren't doing very much work. That's just a test number. The number you're going to use or your customers are going to deploy are going to vary depending on what is the workload. A SQL VM will take up more space than a desktop VM. But it is possible, and we can actually boot the thing. We have about 1 petabyte of usable storage across the 4 racks. The first rack has about 260 terabytes. And that's highly redundant, highly available storage for both tenant workloads and for a backup.
Okay, good to go.
I think that covers that. Mike.
Great. Figure out which button to push here. So when we approached this problem, we had a history with these workloads. So we contribute the Building Clouds blog off of TechNet. And we publish these artifacts as we're creating. We kind of look at the latest and greatest of technologies and say, hey, can we go create some artifacts that kind of demonstrate how these tools would be used? And we've been releasing them through the web platform installer feed. So we, looking at this problem, we had already created Exchange, SharePoint, and Link as service templates originally for Virtual Machine Manager. We had then followed up and created the same workloads as just plain VM roles for Windows Azure Pack. And the challenge we had was, okay, well, we know service providers and enterprises both are going to be using CPS, and they're going to want to host applications, right? In some cases, they may just hand out blank virtual machines, and people can build what they want. In other cases, they want to be able to say, when you go to a gallery, I want to click on an icon for an application, and that should just spin up and be ready for people to just take over and kind of keep the, try to drive how to build those things into a smaller subset of the activity that you have to complete. So that's something we set out to solve. We knew that Windows Azure Pack would be the experience for those tenants or the APIs / commandlets associated with that. Is it going? You may have to hit the, oh, there we go. That'll work. We knew that within Windows Azure Pack, if you wanted to use the gallery, you needed to use VM roles. Because basically, when you go into the gallery, you can either click on a VM template or a VM role. Technically, the difference is in a VM role, it allows you to execute commands after deployment. So a VM template's just going to bring that operating system online. A VM role is going to include the ability for you to say, after that operating system comes online, now go execute these commands, and more importantly, accept parameters from the tenant as they're in that gallery. So they may want to say, here's how I want to name the machine, here's how I want to name my Active Directory forest, here's how I want to name my Exchange organization, here's the passwords that I want to use, et cetera. We knew that going in, Exchange and SharePoint technically didn't support VM roles with a couple of good examples. So we really wanted to follow the Exchange and SharePoint PLAs. We knew the product line architecture, so their support statements. When we created the VM roles originally, we knew that they were just going to be for dev and tests. They were just examples, and it was, hey, I want to go make sure that the latest rounds of security updates or something, you know, work with my existing SharePoint farm. So you could have easily spun them up, patch it, everything looks great, you know, that kind of thing. We wanted to take it a step further, and we also wanted to create a model that anybody could use when they were creating something to put in the gallery that was a much more complex prototype or much more complex architecture than something like just a simple VM role. VM roles traditionally were a single-tier architecture, so whenever you would deploy it, you would get a VM. You could sort of laterally scale that, meaning you could spin up 5 more of exactly the same thing. But it was difficult to say, I'm going to have first tier, second tier, third tier, unless you were willing to manually deploy multiple VM roles and trust the user to put those things in the right order. So that presented a challenge for us to try to overcome. The second one that was a big one was that these workloads each, in their PLA document, requests fixed virtual disks. They did not want dynamically expanding disks. VM roles traditionally use a differencing disk, which by nature is also dynamically expanding. So that was a challenge. So that describes what we wanted to do. The scope of what we were trying to work on is really just within Windows Azure Pack. We really wanted to focus on Active Directory, Exchange, and SharePoint. We've got some additional workloads in mind that we want to work through, but these are all things we'll be releasing publicly It'll probably be a new version of the same VM roles, and then the SMA scripts as well. We also wanted to think about the latest tooling. So we wanted to think about how would we use sort of the continuous deployment tool set as it's becoming available from Microsoft to help solve these problems, as opposed to just, you know, just using traditional script methodology. So do you want to take on the next few?
I can talk about this. All right, so there's some level set on the requirements on if you want to take this on yourself. Well, the concept we're talking about here is fairly 100, 200 level, like deploying workloads. The when you get down into the weeds, you need a baseline, and maybe 400 plus is a little high, but definitely 350 on your level of knowledge with the following artifacts or technology types. VM role, which there's a VM role authoring tool that's available. There's videos on how to use it, so familiarize yourself with that. It's essentially creating the JSON files and what's necessary to be imported into VMM and into Windows Azure Pack. SMA runbook creation and modification. So if you want to take the runbooks that we've created and provided for you, you're going to want to know how to do that and what happens if you change this variable and whatnot. So if you've never used SMA before, you're not going to want to crack it open. You can use it as is, as an example, but you're going to want to leave it alone. And then DSC, which is not really obvious because we don't ship you here the scripts, and we obviously could do that, but they're really baked in to the, and they're available probably in the resource kit and stuff. But as far as how they're related here, they're baked into the VM role as far as the package, and the resources are shipped on the OS disk, and obviously that would all be part of the process in the creating. So you're going to want to be familiar with the technologies that we're using here, and we're not pulling any punches here. It's a pretty advanced skill set. So the good news is if you start looking at the example, you will grow your skill set, so I think that's always a good thing.
We should mention, for all of the technologies you just had on that slide, we're probably not going to spend too much time today going into the details of how each individual technology works. We don't have time. We want to tell more about the story of how they work together. But that Building Clouds blog that I mentioned earlier is a good resource that you can go to find more information in detail about each of these technologies.
Thanks. So what we're going to do now is kick off the demo, because it's really simple to kick off. I literally just subscribed myself to a plan, and the automation takes care of the rest. And then we'll talk through what's actually happening, and by the end of our talk, we'll be midstream of the actual deployment, but we also have one that's completed, and the whole demo is being done on an actual CPS rack. So you'll get, if you haven't seen a demo of what the software on a CPS rack is, or if you've never seen VMM before, I guess you're going to see it now. So I'm going to switch over. So, as you know, there's two portals for Windows Azure Pack. I'm in the tenant portal right now, and later on, when we come back to the demo, we're actually going to dive into the runbooks and DSC scripts and all that good stuff. But right now, I'm going to show you how simple it is that for our example scenario, how to deploy essentially a dedicated Exchange environment, and it's as simple as going, being logged in as a tenant user, going new, my account, add subscription, and then I have the choice of plans. Now, obviously, the service provider is going to need to create all the back-end stuff, or you will, but your users are going to be able to just click on this plan, and it could be a different plan, and we'll go over the ones that we suggest you use with these artifacts as a sample. But this one will deploy the Microsoft first-party apps using SMA plus VMroll plus DSC. Now, for this show and on these CPS racks, we're only doing dedicated Exchange, but we do have examples for SharePoint as well, but this is just an example for Exchange. So I'm going to go ahead and click this button, and essentially that screen will go away. SPF event will fire in the background, and that will kick off a runbook, and then everything will happen. So we'll dig into that a little later, but we're going to move on back to the slides. I did say kickoff, so that's the extent of the demo right now, but we'll have lots of time to dive into the interesting stuff once it's finished. or once we're finished talking about it. So let's talk about the technology a little bit. What are the solution components? And we've said them over and over again already, but there's three primary components. There's SMA, which is doing the automation. There's VM roles, that's essentially doing the provisioning and providing the deployment mechanism for the payload. And then there's DSC, which essentially is for the deployment and the configuration of the workloads. I mean, it doesn't matter. And this will work for any workload. These are the base generic types. These are the lowest common denominators for the tasks that we're providing in the solution. So we're going to talk through some technology and architecture decisions and then provide a little visualization to sum it up. So we're leveraging VM roles as the delivery mechanism for DSC, orchestrated by SMA. And SMA runbooks at this time are invoked by a WAP/SPF event for subscription create, which is an event that's available, as well as Microsoft Compute VM role create. So we're using both of those events as part of SMA to trigger the rest of what's going on in the entire deployment. We're leveraging DSC as the lowest common denominator for application deployment and VM customization. And we're leveraging SMA to perform all the prerequisite tasks for the VM roles themselves. VM role dependencies, which one should go first, or you know, which one should make sure that has the IP addresses it needs, and things like that. Attaching the VHDs, or creating the VHDs, network creation, NAT role creation, connectivity verification, anything you could imagine that's essentially outside the VM. Which brings us to Michael's favorite point. when you boil it down, everything outside the VM is handled by SMA, and everything inside the VM is handled by DSC, unless for some reason it's an external environment prerequisite that DSC can't handle.
That's probably the number one point. If you walk out of here and you think, what's the one point I wanted to get out of this? Is that basic notion that, and the reason this is so important to me is since we've created this model, from recent customer visits, I've found that this will actually work in a number of new scenarios, not just in things around VM roles. So the idea that inside the server, in this case it's a virtual machine, everything that's going on is there is managed by or is being configured by DSC. What's going on outside of that object is being driven by SMA. So you've got PowerShell both inside and outside handling the work effort, but these things pair up very, very well, and we're going to go into a little bit of detail about why. But that concept right there is really the number one thing we took away from this exercise.
And we've dedicated the whole next slide to how important it is. So you've seen the three solutions, or the three components in this solution. And we're going to go stay with that color coding and the little graphics here. And really, this is, I like to make this out more than it is, and it's really not much. So how does that work? Everything outside the VM is SMA, and everything inside driving the deployment is DSC. And that's just a visualization. We had a different one that was three concentric circles that was less impressive than this. So not that this is super impressive, but. So let's talk through the actual scenario. We talked about the technology. Let's walk through the actual scenario itself. So there's two primary scenarios that we've enabled through SMA, and they're both tenant scenarios. The first is tenant provisioning. From the name of the session, you'd have gathered that. But the very high-level steps of what we talk about when we say tenant provisioning, we're initiating the whole thing by a subscription to a plan, as you saw in the kickoff. We're generating an isolated software-defined network, as well as NAT gateways that allow for inbound and outbound routing. So we get internet if we need it, and if we need to RDP into those endpoints, we can do it. We're deploying a multi-VM service with VM roles, and we're taking care of the prerequisites and dependency tasks with SMA, and we're doing post-deployment VM role tasks like attaching disks. And of course, we have the option for deployment notifications. The other is simply we have the ability to deprovision this because in our testing, we're spinning up many of these. And I don't like clicking buttons, so I created a bunch of scripts that would blow them all away. So you may know if you've used Windows Azure Pack, if you don't have the event set up for subscription.delete and you don't have a runbook attached to it, if you delete a subscription on the tenant side, everything's still just there in VMM. So this tenant provisioning or deprovisioning is also important because once you enable that event in SPF to kick off the deprovisioning, it will actually, whatever runbook you want, I have published one if you want to use it, will get rid of the resources associated with that subscription, freeing up your rack or your resources for other users and whatnot. So it's a pretty decent sized gap that we've filled with automation. And all of this stuff has either been available since summer or is available most recently, the deprovisioning as a couple weeks ago. So you could take this and use it in your WAP, VMM, SMA environment today. It doesn't have to be on CPS, but we happen to use that same functionality and technology. So I want to walk through what's actually happening, and I will briefly switch over to prove that things are working. You can see I now have a subscription to the collaboration workloads here. And if we go to the automation over here, and we go to runbooks, well, you can see it down there, it is running. You can see I have a subscription create dispatcher running, and the VM role create dispatcher is also running. Those are the two primary runbook events that I talked about. And then let me sort by user role. Here we have two domain controllers currently going, and a mailbox is deploying. And while that's still churning, let me talk through what's actually happening with this little build out here. So to keep in mind the key there, dark green is what the user does, blue is SMA, and light green is DSC. And keep in mind what we've said earlier, that everything outside the VM is is SMA, and everything inside is DSC. And a lot of these little chevrons are actually happening at the same time for both technologies. We're taking advantage of that, and we'll speak to that later. So as you saw, the WAP subscription gets created. The VM network is then created, and we'll show you that, but these VM roles require networks, so if they're working, it's created. The VM deployments have started, and you already saw that. We're monitoring the VM roles with an SMA runbook that's actually monitoring the VMM job ID. That was the quickest way we can get the return information on it. It tracks failure and cancellation and all that, and then we report that as needed. But once it succeeds, it's likely successful. We can obviously dive deeper once it is created to know if the services are up and stuff like that. But for our examples here, we use monitoring of the SC job ID. Once the VM roles are completed, we're monitoring for that. The VM configuration inside the VM has started. And this is customizing the VM for Active Directory. It's customizing the VM for Exchange or whatever the workload is. And the other thing it's doing is it's waiting for stuff that SMA is going to do. Like SMA's got to still attach a disk. That might take 5 minutes or 10 minutes. So DSC is allowing us the flexibility to wait for things, and that's one of the key things that we leverage DSC for, is configuration, waiting for things, configuration, waiting for things. So at the same time, we're taking advantage of time while doing parallel execution, NAT rules are created, the disks are created or attached, and we can actually scale the VM roles as well as needed. So we're going to deploy one mailbox server, and then we're going to scale it once it's finished. Or we're going to deploy a client access server and then scale it once it's finished. So during this process, the application deployment has started. And remember, it's the DSC scripts inside the VMs that are determining, am I ready to deploy the software yet? OK, well, I'm going to deploy the software now. And then the deployment itself in SMA or how it looks in VMM is completed. Notifications are sent. Hey, your VMs are going to be ready soon. You'll get another notification when you could hit the endpoint for the OWA server or something like that. We haven't implemented this yet, but the idea here would be that we can get the VM status from inside the VM through the NAT gateway. And monitor, we have a runbook for it, which will work, just we didn't implement it, that we can monitor for the endpoint and say, is the OWA page ready? Is it ready? And then we can send the final notification we wanted to. And then at some point, the application deployment completes. And then final notifications are sent. So this is sort of the process. A lot of this stuff happens at the same exact time. So we'll talk through a time-saving slide in a little bit, and I think is pretty impressive when given what all we're doing. All right. So we're going to talk through the three scenarios, and these sort of align to the plans that I was referring to. We do nothing. We provide you the VM roles. We provide the users the VM roles, or you do, for that matter. And it's just capacity and the availability to do things.
We should probably explain the VM role scenarios, what we mean by this. Basically, we're saying if you're a tenant and you go log into WAP, what are your options that would allow you to build out these things in your environment? So what are the different approaches that might be available to you? And you can really think about this in terms of other tools and platforms as well. So it could be that it's someone who's going to a service provider. They want to have virtual machines with these workloads hosted, and so they're going to deploy them into their plan. It could also be something where you're in an enterprise environment. So what's getting deployed is just going to be on the enterprise network, and there's a variety of ways that you could approach having someone who's in a division come to a centralized location, go to the gallery, pick what they want, and have it deployed on their behalf.
All right, so that's full DIY. Then there's what I call the semi-auto, which means it just deploys the table stakes. If your scenario means I want all my tenants to have an isolated software-defined network and Active Directory, we can have a plan that just does that. And then their job is to, I want Exchange, or I want SharePoint, or I want this other workload that has been created for me as a VM role. Then there's the scenario that we're talking through here, or demoing here, which is full auto. And we are performing the dedicated exchange one, the top bullet there. So each one of these has the ability, and these could be different plans, or you could set up however you want. But each of these incorporates a different experience, the end experience for the user. So in ours, we're going to end up with two mailbox servers, a client access server, two instances of an Active Directory. But within just a couple tweaks of the runbook, or if they choose a different plan, you could have them have, you know, just a SQL IaaS box that has a SQL Always On installed. And then they could manually go install SharePoint or something like that. Or you could have everything. And we have a slide coming up that shows you what all gets deployed. So I believe this is where I hand it back over to Jeff to speak through some of the sizing stuff and what we're doing for test and whatnot.
Okay, so when we started this project on CPS, we looked at what are the most common things people will want to deploy, what are the most common things the tenants are going to want to deploy. And we thought about it in terms of many tenants, possibly small and medium businesses. Pretty much everybody wants Exchange. Everybody wants SharePoint. And these are we're not trying to drive people away from Office 365, which in many ways is a better solution. But there are reasons people will be afraid of the cloud, of the public cloud. You can offer a very similar experience on a private cloud or a hosted cloud. On the left side is kind of the small collaboration workload tiles. And this is where we started. The CAT team in Buildings Clouds have documented these various single instance, one VM per workload deployment, right? This is when we thought VM roles, oh, that's a single VM. We can't tie everything together. We can't do the complicated and approved installations of Exchange or SharePoint. But over time, our thinking has evolved, and that may be fine for dev and test. That's not a production workload. To deliver a production workload, you really have to break out the roles, and you have to allow scaling of the roles. So for us, the minimum collaboration workload today, and this will evolve, no doubt, Exchange, SharePoint, Active Directory, and behind SharePoint, a SQL's Always On farm. This is what Charles and Michael are describing now. And the full meal deal is that whole tile. The other thing the tile is useful for is for my test team. to go build out many of these. Let's see how many we can put on a box, and let's see what the load is on a CPS rack. That's still work in progress. I'm not going to stand here and tell you you can put 500 of these tiles and support that many users. We have some short-term goals. We'll publish those shortly in a blog and describe what kind of workloads and what kind of I/O traffic, both internal and external networks, as well as the storage.
Thanks. So the point of this slide is just to describe, and I'm going to talk you through it, exactly what all is happening. And this really illustrates if you want to take on a very, very complicated workload. You want to put something in the gallery, so you've got a CPS rack, or maybe you're just using WAP. You want to put something in the gallery, whether it's triggered by subscription or by VMroll, and we'll talk about the differences a little bit in one of the slides coming up. How complicated of a series of events could you put together? And this is a pretty good one. So we actually start off with the subscription. It was an easy way for us to, it's got a nice set of events around it, so it was easy for us to start from there. And it's we actually collect information at tenant sign-in. So we just take the domain name off of their registration information and use that as some defaults. We could just as easily make it based on anything else. The reason that these are all put together on this slide in this order is that once that subscription is triggered, the first thing that gets created, obviously, is the network, because they all have, that network has to be there for these VMs to get provisioned into. All of these VMs actually get provisioned in parallel. When we started this, we were using the original VM roles we had written, and there was really nothing inside of it that would tell and say, hey, Exchange, you can't start deploying until the Active Directory Forest is online. It's a requirement for you. So I harped on that for a while. What we found is with DSC, there's this concept of wait for. And basically, wait for is just a way to say, basically have a loop running in PowerShell, and you can use, in our case, the Active Directory commandlets, check and see if a domain is available, and just continue, go on this many loops for these many seconds until it is. And you just define that in your configuration. So basically, everything to begin with is starting and waiting for DC server 001. Another thing that's interesting about VM roles, you have the ability to say, I want to execute a task only on the first unit of scale, meaning if I'm going to deploy four of these things, take a special task only on the first one. You can also say things like only on the last one if it's a deprovisioning scenario, or you can say only on everything after the first one. So that's kind of a unique thing that VMroles offered that allowed us to say, let's go ahead and just put some tattooing on that server so that when the configuration is figuring out which details it should include, it can say, oh, looks like I'm on the first server, so I'm going to be the guy who actually creates the forest. As that's happening, this guy especially is waiting for that forest to come online. So he doesn't have that initial tattoo. He's using wait for domain as well. So as soon as that forest is available, then that second DC comes online. Obviously, everything else in here is also waiting for that forest. But in the meantime, a number of these workloads have Windows roles and features that they can go ahead and add that don't require to be domain joined before that happens. You can also go ahead and bring any data disks online. So we'll talk a little bit about how that works on the SMA side. So that you can imagine these guys are probably going through some initial reboots. Exchange, as an example, might be adding IIS, bring that online, things like that. So all these machines are populating at the same time. Then that forest becomes available. They all join. Then we need somebody to go ahead and extend the schema for Exchange. So the same concept. That first mailbox server takes on the schema extensions. The remaining mailbox server nodes, as well as the client access server nodes, are all waiting to recognize that the schema has been extended. And then they can go ahead and complete their installation. SQL, obviously, as soon as the domain's available, it can keep going. And then SharePoint, we're at this point in the work effort, we are just installing SharePoint. We're not doing the farm creation yet. That's something that we're looking at doing as the next set of things to accomplish. So they would require SQL to be on. So there is already a wait for SQL resource, I believe. If not, it would be a pretty trivial one to create. And that allows all of these things to happen in parallel. And the time savings we've found is pretty significant. But if you look at what's being actually done by DSC versus what's being done by SMA, it goes back to that simple principle that if it's inside the VM, it's DSC. If it's outside the VM, it's SMA. So SMA would actually create the network. SMA would actually monitor the VM roles for progress. We're not using, if you're familiar with DSC, whenever you actually apply your configuration, you can tell the PowerShell session to either wait until that configuration has completely played out or just hand it off to the DSC engine and then trust that it's going to finish. And then if any errors come back, you'll detect those through event tracing. So we don't use wait. We just tell DSC, here's the configuration. It's like a contract with the machine. We expect that you're going to handle this. That allows us to return back into VMM and say, okay, SMA, when you see that VM role looks like it's completed, go ahead and start creating data disks, which means for Active Directory, it's where you're going to put your database and logs. For Exchange, it's where you're going to put database and logs, for so on and so forth throughout the workloads. We can also go ahead and create the NAT rules so that we want to have access to port 443 for the web workloads, 25 for mail and things like that. So what's happening inside the VM as these things are playing out, those disks get brought online, and that's just literally creating a new VHD. It was faster to create them than it was to copy them from the library. We're initializing that disk and making sure it has the right drive letter. Like I said, we're doing the Windows roles and features as these things are happening. The source disk is because Exchange and SharePoint, as well as SQL, are a fairly good-sized installation media. So we actually just drop that into a VHD, bring it over, and let that be utilized as a source resource. And it solves a number of problems for us. But the data disk we create as a new VHD. And then obviously DSC is handling the workload setup and then handling the post-installation configuration, such as creating DAGs and things like that as well. But as far as DSC is concerned, for SharePoint, we haven't released them yet, but for Exchange, you may have seen in the most recent resource kit update, there's actually 23 Exchange DSC resources available, so that's where all the post-configuration tasks will come from. The resources that are handling Exchange setup, Exchange schema, and wait for Exchange schema are releases that I'll be releasing as we'll basically do a new version of what's in the resource kit for X-Exchange, and that'll include those three resources. And then we'll be updating X-Active Directory with some enhancements that we learned through this process as well. But the updates that we took for X-Active Directory actually originally came from the SharePoint gallery item that's in Azure. So there's definitely truth in the story that you hear that there's a lot of work going on between the on-prem and the public cloud guys who are doing development. There's definitely a lot of work going through that. So this is the last slide for me, and I'll hand it over to Charles. Remember that I mentioned originally we were deploying these as just VM roles, and that I was harping on how long it took for these to run. So originally we were just looking at dev test, and we were just going to deploy an Active Directory VM and then one combined mailbox CAS role. So only two VMs. The mailbox was just one of them. It was a 40 gig disk that we were copying from the library, and it took an hour and 20 minutes to get everything deployed. Very, very simple, small environment. You would never consider really using this for production environment unless it was, just a small branch office type scenario with a dedicated set of machines. Moving over to the more sophisticated approach, we're actually in, as one of the things that we did a little bit of performance testing, we basically put these things in a race, right, and said, you go, and we'll see who ends first and how much time it took. But we ended up deploying six virtual machines. So that includes Active Directory, that includes Exchange. The mailbox servers were much larger. So A, you have two of them. B, they're using 250 gig disks, so there's much more being created on the stamp. And all of those machines came online, and OO was responding within an hour. So it's interesting, we were able to deploy a much more complicated scenario in less time, and it's just because of using PowerShell both inside and outside. So.
Did you want this, or you want me?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take this one.
I can.
We just wanted to cover off on what do we have in the pipeline. So what are we thinking about doing next as part of this work effort? Assuming that, can you just hit next so it populates out? There you go. Kind of what's in scope and where we want to take it from here. I mentioned that right now we're triggering off the subscription, and that's based on the notion that in the service provider world, you really want that consumption to start as soon as somebody gets their subscription, right? You want to say, hey, they subscribe to a plan, let's make it easy for them, number one. Number two, it'd be great if they go ahead and start using the plan as soon as possible, so let's get things created. But it would be very easy to also just create a VM role that collects all of the parameters for each of these workloads and then have SMA trigger off of that. So just like what we're doing with the subscription, maybe the subscription would only create the network or only the network and Active Directory. But you could say, I want an Exchange resource gallery item, And it's going to not just deploy one Exchange server. It's going to go ahead and give me two mailbox servers, two client access servers. It's going to plug into load balancing everything. What you would end up doing is have one VM role associated with that. And even though that's just going to deploy, let's say, the mailbox server tier, all of the parameters for everything you're looking for would be collected by that VM role, because that parameter information is visible to SMA. So SMA can say, oh, okay, I see that this has been triggered. I'm going to go ahead and kick off a runbook. I'll handle the scale outs. I'll handle adding the second tier. I'll handle any additional tasks along the way. We also are looking at doing some additional validation. We definitely want to create the DAGs within Exchange. We believe we might be able to handle, in my most recent iteration, I've got certificate services coming online within the forest, and there's commandlets available that's actually in the DSC resource kit under X-Exchange to bring those certificates in. One of the things that would be very interesting that we've heard already from some feedback from people we've talked to is there's really no reason why you couldn't accept a parameter that said something like, this is how many users I expect to put in this environment. And then based on that, you could dynamically adjust how big of a data disk you should create. Maybe 250 gigs is going to be insufficient because you're going to throw 1,000 users at it. You could just as easily go create a 4 terabyte disk. And then as they, you could put text next to that that says, hey, by the way, if you say 50 users, this won't take very long to deploy. If you say 4,000 users, I'll see you tomorrow because I've got to go create a whole bunch of data disks for you, and it's going to take some time to get that space allocated. So there's a lot that we could do in this space. So Charles can take you back to the demo.
All right. So I'm going to bring it back to the demo machine, which is an actual CPS rack. I'd like to remind you that. And I want to walk you through what his automation has already done and what it's working on right now. So I expanded the view there, the history of the recent jobs, and you could see all of these tasks that completed in VMM happened because we initiated them in SMA. Now, there are some things that obviously I initiate in SMA that go against the Windows or the Azure Pack SMA API. But some things like the network I go against VMM, but you can go against the API. But once the API gets it, it obviously goes through SPF and does it against VMM. So, and just to show that we weren't kidding on what we were doing, these are the tasks. We created a user role that happens automatically with when you create a subscription to a plan, so that's nothing that we do. But the network stuff you see there, all that was done via runbooks. This one, which I like to point out because it helps a lot in the cleanup, is that I create a cloud service using the API, and I name it cloud service for, and then whatever the GUID is for that subscription name. Obviously, you can do whatever you want. But by doing this, I create a cloud service, and then I'm putting all the VM roles in that cloud service as dependent resources in that cloud service. What does that mean from a deployment standpoint? Not much. From an API standpoint, yeah, they'll have similar URLs, you know, from in the rest URLs. But really, deprovisioning, all I have to do at that point, if I want to get rid of all those VM roles at once, is delete the cloud service, and it cleans them up in order. And as Mike said, with VM roles, it can have that on deprovision do this. So if you needed to remove certain things and do certain actions, like take it out of AD and stuff like that, you can do those things. But this is the reason I put all the VM roles in one cloud service. You don't have to do this. If you created them independently, they would each get their own cloud service. But I like a nice clean package deal that I can get rid of all at once, especially when I'm testing and whatnot. So you can see we added the Active Directory and Exchange mailbox here. We added the client access server. And there were some obviously some other VMM jobs that go there. Then we create two disks. These are very small disks, so it didn't take very long. But the mailbox server here, we attached a 250 gig disk, and it took about 7 minutes. Obviously, that time goes up. I said 4 terabytes, we'd still be watching it. But it's, that your environment may vary. It gives you an idea on a CPS rack right now what it takes to do that. We add the NAT rules, and this allows us inbound and outbound access. Once the CAS box finished, it created a disk, and you could see the scale job just finished. And in the runbooks, what's actually going to happen right now is the scale of this mailbox is going to get a 250 gig disk as well. So that job will be starting up here any time now. And again, all of that is done via automation that I will show you. But I think we've had a good enough look outside the VM. Let's take a look at what's happening inside the VM. And I'd like to bring up a volunteer. Tanner, oh, perfect. So.
Thanks, Charles.
All right. And this is PowerShell, and he's going to talk you through the configuration scripts. So I just want you to be aware where we're at with this. It's a little deeper. Obviously, you're going to see some script on the screen, so hopefully you stick around.
So Charles mentioned what we've done with SMA against the VM, and Michael did a bunch of references on how we can hand kind of a contract from SMA to DSC. So what I'm actually going to do are two things. I would like you I'm going to show you and walk you through the DSC, the desired state configuration. And what I love about DSC is that it is human readable. So if I'm going to walk you through the configuration, it will show exactly what we are going to do, what the intention is. And I'm going to give you a sneak peek in the modules, the DSC modules, to trigger you to go either create your own modules or to download the samples we have and go customize them for your own environment. So let's take a look at the foundation. We're going to set up Active Directory. So this is the DSC configuration script. So obviously in this section, and I'm not sure whether that's good readable. Let me zoom in a bit. Are you able to read that? Is that readable?
I'd zoom it in.
Okay. Let's use the slide here. So you can see that the assert section is accepting and sending parameters to this DSC configuration. So obviously we're going to collect domain name, NetBIOS name, and credential stuff. And when we have that, we want to make sure that we are able to utilize certificates so that we are able to encrypt credentials. We don't want to have readable in plain text credentials going on. So we want to make sure that we utilize, if we have a certificate, and obviously we have, that we utilize that encryption technology within this configuration script. So here we are making sure that we have that. And where it is becoming interesting is that we are peeking at the configuration data. So we have set up the certification stuff, and this is the interesting part, because now we are looking at the configuration data for this domain controller. And what we're actually going to do are a bunch of smart things with some nifty things, making sure that we match the server name, the computer name, doing some regular expression checks here. So we make sure that we are targeting the DSC server and making sure that we hand it over, that the server role is going to be an Active Directory domain controller. Here you can see that we are passing a bunch of parameters. And in case that we are having a certificate, so this is fail-safe, so if we don't have a certificate, we'll go clear text. But in this case, we're going to utilize the certificate and making sure that we are not leaving clear text passwords in the configuration file. So we're going to protect that and encrypt that with a certificate. This is the section that Michael talked about. So in this first pass we're going to throw at, this is the first domain controller. So we want to make sure that we have a tattooing going on within that VM. This is what Michael referenced. We're going to utilize a text file. So if we see that text file, we know that this is the first domain controller. So we're not repeating stuff on the second domain controller, which we only should do once. So here you can see that we detect that it is the first domain controller. We're going to utilize DSC resources, Active Directory, and going to make sure that we pass that parameters. And here is the section where Michael touched briefly on, that we are going to utilize data disks. So here you can see the X wait for disk and the X data disk. So we are making sure that SMA is there and has provided us the disk. So this is the contract from SMA to DSC. And we're going to make sure that the data disk is getting a drive letter assigned. We're going to store that in a parameter to be used later on. And here, we're going to make sure that the Windows feature, domain services, is being invoked. So we're going to make that a domain controller utilizing that Windows feature keyword. So here we're passing a bunch of credentials, making sure that we have the disk. And I want to point you to the depends on keyword. So see it as a kind of waterfall. So we are invoking a bunch of DSC configuration checks, and one of them is depends on. So each and every one is depending on the previous one. So if the requirement hasn't been met, we're either going to break out or we're going to wait until that dependency has been taken care. For example, we want to make sure that the NTDS and the sysfol is going to be stored on our data disk. So if the data disk isn't there yet, we're going to wait for it, and if it is there, we're going to assign that to drive letter and making sure that we store that on the disk. So you see a bunch of depends on in each and every section, so we make sure that the requirement and dependency has been resolved. Now the local configuration manager, so this is so to say the agent on the box, the DSC side of it, you can configure that with a certificate, but this is something to take notion about. So there are multiple ways to apply a DSC configuration, either apply only or apply and monitor, so we can log the drift, configuration drift, or you can set it to apply and autocorrect. So if we have configuration drift, DEC will then correct it for you. And in case we need a reboot, we're going to make sure that we reboot the box. And this is actually the section that we're going to create the configuration data, so we're going to generate a MOF file for it. And then we are actually going to make sure that the second domain controller, the backup domain controller, is being created after that. So this is actually the same thing. And here's the point that Michael pointed out. We're going to wait for that domain so that the domain is present. And if the domain is present, we're going to join that domain and then making sure that we are adding a second domain controller. So this is the part of that we don't want to repeat a piece which only has to be executed once. Going down here, we are actually creating the MOF file and actually going to apply that configuration. We're going to make sure that WinRM is configured correctly. We're going to make sure that the local configuration manager is set like the way we want it. So apply, auto-apply, and apply and auto-correct. And here is the section that we're actually going to deploy that configuration to that specific computer name. So this is Active Directory. Now, similar things will apply to the Exchange setup, so I'm not going to repeat myself here. Obviously, we're going to hand over parameters, but this is the section that we're going to create a mailbox server. So then again, we're going to filter the computer name, making sure that we import the correct modules for it. But I wanted to point out here that we are doing something smart on the Windows feature. Now, we need multiple Windows features for this role. So instead of doing multiple sections, which actually is going to be repeated, I'm going to scroll down below here and open up the configuration data. Here we are saying required features. So that will have all our dependencies Windows features we are requiring. So we are gathering that in a kind of array style. And then looking back at where we just were, you can see that we are going to apply those Windows features in one time. So that's a great advantage. So again, here's the data disk we're going to rely on. And if we are having a pending reboot, we're going to make sure that that happens. You can see that we're doing some Exchange prerequisites installations. And then finally, we're going to Exchange here, invoking the Exchange installation setup. Again, same story here. We're going to configure the local configuration manager. And then we're going to over to the second part of it and configuring the CAS server side of it. So this is actually the configuration script. I just want to briefly flash the modules we have, so you can download them and play around with them. So this is the domain controller side of it. So here we go. We are going to do some checks. If there is an existing domain out there, whether we have a domain controller, if we have, we're going to mention that to you. We're going to make sure that we're not creating domain, a forest and a domain and domain controller if you have one. And if that isn't the case, we're going to go and create that domain controller. So I don't want to take much time up because I'm inviting you to go download it, explore it, and test it out. And that goes for the other experimental modules we have by creating a disk, wait for the disk, wait for the domain to be created. So that's my part. Thanks.
Thanks, Tander.
Sure.
All right, let's go back to the CPS rack and take a look at how things are going. And let's see. I'll just go to the jobs real quick, see what portion of the, where we are. Oh, I think I chose the wrong rack. Yep, I did. I had two CPS racks up that I needed in case I needed more capacity. No, I'm actually on the backup rack. The one on the show floor we're not allowed to use during show hours, so I was using a backup rack, which is in Redmond. So I chose the wrong one. So, okay. Which, if you're interested in getting a one-on-one demo, go to the expo floor. Me or anyone else on there can show you and walk through the stuff as well if you don't get enough of it here. And, okay, no. Let's see if that... Yep, okay, cool. So the second mailbox server completed and added the VHD. You can see, let's see how long this one took. Another 7 minutes, pretty consistent. And let's now go take a look at the VMs. Now, an hour hasn't passed yet, or an hour-ish hasn't passed yet, since we initiated all of these. So it takes about an hour, 20 minutes to make sure. It depends on what's going on the boxes, reboots, and all that stuff. But eventually, we'll log in to one of the endpoints, or you know, we could look directly into one of the VMs right now. They all should be on the domain at this point, obviously, and they should either be finished installing Exchange or just about finished configuring Exchange for OWA and all that. So I'm going to actually brave it here, and we'll just check to see if this is on the domain. That's always a good indication. And it's not yet. So, but this can happen really quick. So we don't know exactly where this is. And like I said, we're about 20 minutes away from the hour mark. So we still have a lot of time for things to finish, and that could finish in that time. I bet the first mailbox is. So what I'm going to do, instead of going through VMM, I want to show you some of the experience in case you haven't seen it from the Azure Pack portal. But I'm just going to refresh the tenant. And if you're wondering, you're working either in SMA or you're on the tenant side and it says your token is timed out and you're right in the middle of work and you're like, oh, what do I do? That's the ADFS token if you have ADFS enabled. You can extend that time, and I have in our racks because I hate being in the middle of a run book and it says, oh, you've timed out. So, of course, if that happens to you, just hit escape, copy the what you've been working on, save it, and then refresh the page. You'll be fine. Don't just refresh the page, otherwise you'd lose what you have in the SMA. But that's the ADFS token timing out. It's not anything scary. Okay, you could see And this is a good point that we didn't really address, but from the end user tenant portal, it looks like everything's done, right? Now, when we're attaching disks, it says not ready on the instance level. But right now, you wouldn't necessarily know that this is still DSC going on. So that's why we have the monitoring option to say, is the service ready yet? And once it is, we'll send an email. So this is going to have to be handled by notifications right now. We haven't figured out a fully supported way to report on the portal that they're not necessarily ready to use yet. I mean, it's not terrible because you log in, it'll either be rebooting or something else, but people might want to know, you know, when it's actually finished. So we have options for that. It's just not showing up in the portal. So I'm going to actually go to the mailbox instance or VMroll here, and then click on instances. You can see we had two because I autoscale via runbook. I'm just going to pick this first one, or the first one that was deployed, and I'm going to choose connect, and I'm going to choose console connect, which is really kind of neat. Because it's doing some magic behind the scenes to connect me essentially through Hyper-V to this machine. And it's less impressive with Windows because, it's more impressive with non-Windows OS, I think. But definitely for this, it's helpful because we can now get into the machine. We can watch it reboot. We can see it do things that you can't see if you're just RDPing. So I'm in a nested thing here, but I learned something this week. So because if I did Control-Alt-End, it really won't work. So I learned something, though. If you go to on-screen keyboard, press Control-Alt, then hit Delete, it'll go in there. So I like that little trick. You can see that it is part of the Contoso domain, which that's what we determined in the runbooks. And now I can log in. So I'm going to log in as Contoso. I have no idea if I typed it right. Nope, I didn't. All right, so we're logging into the mailbox server, which is on the domain, which is a good first step. And we should see when we're logged in, it should have some stuff going. But we can take a look at what has happened through logs and whatnot. So I'm going to just type in Exchange, and you can see it has already started doing Exchange. I can't speak to whether it's completely finished or not, but you can see that here. Now, I just want to quickly dive into what happens in the VM. You know, Tander showed you all that stuff on the DSC side, but right off the bat, you can see here, here's the source disk we attach. Here's the local disk that we attached, or the data disk that we attached, and this is where the Exchange data is going. It's all described in the DSC, and then how about, what if I need to troubleshoot this? Well, we put as defined in the VM role, we put a WAP folder here, and then we can look at the error or the regular output, and then we can dive into the configuration if we need for troubleshooting and whatnot. But we can see here, DSC definitely was kicked off. It did a whole bunch of stuff, and it's now running. If there were errors, they would show up here. So it's kind of nice. You get an idea of what's going on. But the best case scenario is everything works after an hour, and you can log into the client access server endpoint, and you're good to go. And I do want to show now the endpoints. You can
open OO from the mailbox server as well.
Oh.
It should be there.
Oh, it's just type it.
Just hit down arrow.
Oh. Right here.
Yeah, we didn't turn off IE secure mode. So.
Maybe you should make a DSC resource for that. I didn't say that. Sorry. All right. It may not be done yet. Yeah, it's still working on it. So what I want to show next is the networking for the network that was automatically created, because we did promise you that we created a network, and obviously it's there. I'm giving it a name So in VMM, I could identify things quickly on which admin or which tenant has which network. But I wanted to show you, we created these NAT rules here automatically with a runbook. And what we're able to do here is now provide RDP access into the mailbox, and then the second mailbox will actually get one as well. And we're just going to change that source port to something different, and then we could have the same endpoint it'll hit. Now, the CAS box has 25 and 443 lit up. We could do whatever you want, whatever you need for the workloads in this space. So whatever port you need inbound routing through will work. And of course, depending on the gateway, and ours has this, the VMs are on the internet as well. So we could pull down more resources as needed and do more automation stuff directly based on what's on the internet. Now let's see, I'll check VMM one more time to see if it's doing anything. I think VMM's done though. Keeps growing, yeah, okay. But let's see, what else can we show here? I haven't actually shown any of the runbooks, so let me just give you a quick overview of what kind of runbooks. This ships with about 26 runbooks, now 27. Now, CPS ships with 219, I think. And then there's samples on top of that, which automatically come in with SMA. And then this solution here, the automation, there's about 26 runbooks, give or take. You don't have to use them all, but that's what's there. So if we go to the runbooks here, I have tagged everything, and obviously I've kept track of what tags go for which, and we can easily deploy these runbooks with these tags so they wouldn't get in your way in your environment. But everything's driven. You can see the ones that have been run over and over again. That's what's driving these things, and they're attached to actions up here in VM Cloud. So if we take a look at VM Cloud's automation, you can see I have some of the actions lit up, subscription create, subscription delete, VM role create, and scale. All of those are tied to runbooks, and then if something happens in the environment that's prescribed to those, runbooks get kicked off and all this magic happens. So you can easily not have it attached to subscription, like Michael said we were starting to look into, and just have it off of VM role. So you create a VM role, and then it notices it and does the rest. You can do that too. These are examples. So, I guess there's one runbook I want to show that sort of identifies how we're controlling what and where, and it's this sub runbook called Deploy DSC Workloads. I'm going to just go to author. I'm actually going to copy and paste this out into ISC so it's a little easier. See? So this is a runbook that's called by the dispatcher runbook that's being initiated by SPF. And it says, I want to deploy the DSC VM role resources, this specific subset of things that I might have in my environment. And the first thing, of course, we do is the Active Directory. And I, of course, have another sub runbook that takes the whatever authorization method I need, the user role, the VM role name, the pattern, which is important, obviously, from the DSC scripts you saw, what size I'm deploying, how many instances, and then what gallery item, which I'm storing as a variable in SMA. So this one line, you can basically just copy and paste and use over and over again, just change the variables up, and for Exchange, the mailbox, it's the same line, except the pattern's different, the size is different, the instance count's different. And of course, I'm using a different variable, and so on and so forth. For these racks, I have the SharePoint stuff commented out, but if I open that up, it would just deploy those things too. So you could be very prescriptive about all of this. Now, one thing I am doing, and you may have seen this, that's why I'll talk about it, is that we need the Active Directory VMs to actually get specific DNS IP addresses that we've identified when creating the network. So I created a runbook that says, don't move forward until these have the first two IP addresses. Because we're doing everything from scratch every time, I get to do that. You probably won't be that lucky, so you have to define the IP addresses, which is fine. But for this scenario, we're waiting for the AD machines to actually get the IP addresses we need for DNS. But then that's one way to do it, obviously. So I think with that, I'm going to switch back to the slides briefly, and then I want to show you some resources. because the slides have a couple things. Related sessions, obviously, things that are around PowerShell. We have a session tomorrow. I don't know who's coming tomorrow, but it's the last session tomorrow for GIA plus SMA. And then there's some other sessions there. And obviously, you could find us at the expo hall and online at Building Clouds. I'm at Orchestrator Guy on Twitter. And of course, there's at Building Clouds, @building_clouds on Twitter. And then there's a bunch of resources. And this is what I want to show you back on the demo machine. And all of this is available. But I'll show you the actual thing, so when you get there, you can be familiar with it. So obviously, Building Clouds blog. I hope some of you are familiar with the Building Clouds blog. We try to put as much information out there. It's free to use, the examples. So just aka.ms/buildingclouds or aka.ms/bcb will get you there, or Bing Building Clouds or Google Building Clouds on TechNet. The Azure Pack Gallery Item VM Role References Creation Configure Automation. I did this blog post a while ago, but it's still good, where we describe the creation, the configuration, and automation of VM roles, and we give the links necessary and the tools that you can use that will help you with that. And there's also a video of one of the older collaboration workload demos I've done. And then, I guess, not most importantly, but this stuff is available. How I did all this stuff for CPS or on the CPS rack is available. This is the white paper for provisioning that's available. It actually seems to be decently popular, since this is essentially copy and paste from the blog post that some people happen to see. But all the information's there if you need a white paper version of it. And then, again, with deprovisioning, there's another white paper for that, as well as blog posts. So we got you covered. At least that's what we hope. So I think with that and these, and it's just the regular normal slides, we have 4 minutes left for questions. You can come up. You can use the, I guess there's mics, or just scream. But on behalf of the other fine gentlemen here, we appreciate your attendance and attention to this. And obviously, we hope you use this. We hope it maybe interests you in CPS, or at least hope it interests you in deploying the workloads in an automated way. So thank you. Yes, and we'll be at Ask the Experts. So, and I'll have my laptop, so if you want to.
That's these guys, not me.
So, yeah, feel free to stop on by, and we'll happy to walk you through anything, the details that you may have not gotten in the session. So, thank you very much.